Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome to another hour dedicated to the notion of enlightenment, an hour for inquiry, reflection, questions, and more, all in our effort to understand exactly what enlightenment means and what it is to be enlightened. An hour devoted to exploring the edge of consciousness and all that is implied thereof. An hour that recognizes the nature of the subjective experience as being at least as important as the so-called objective reality we reside within. Indeed, an hour dedicated to learning something more about ourselves. An hour designed to help us go further inward and perhaps challenge some of those old ideas about the world we live in and the people we have become. This is an hour where we strive to evaluate knowledge as inseparable from the total experience of reality. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. Every week I read a few of your letters as our way of paying respect to the importance you play in helping us to shape and improve our show. Last week the show was all about the science of prayer. We discussed different types of prayer and the research demonstrating efficacy. What worked, what didn't, and why. Elizabeth wrote, "Your show on prayer was most provocative. If prayer doesn't work on genetically engineered plant seeds, then do you think it will work on patients where stem cell implants have been done?" Now, that's a great question. But if we pursue it, Elizabeth, according to Bill Sweet's opinion, the stem cells were not manufactured in the same way as the seeds. So I would think the answer is probably yes. Joe wrote, "I caught just the tail end of a rebroadcast of your show on prayer. Is there a place where I can go to hear the entire show? A podcast would be terrific." Well, Joe, you can go to the archives here on Hay House Radio and listen anytime. And for all of you, the show usually rebroadcasts three or more times in the week. The week of the live broadcast, that is. And then it moves to the archives on my site, eldontaylor.com. All right. Kyrene wrote, and I hope I'm saying that right, C-H-Y-R-E-N-E. "Thank you, Eldon, for all that you do. I appreciate and enjoy your show immensely." Well, thank you, Kyrene. Elliot and Diane wrote, quote, "We just wanted to let you know that we and the universe are grateful to you for all the work that you do to assist others in opening up their hearts and minds to the truths of the universe." Well, you know, the only thing I can say is thank you and let both of you know that your words of encouragement are truly deeply appreciated. Mark wrote, "Your products have made a huge impact on my success, productivity, and health. I look forward to further positive gains." Thank you, Mark. I would invite all of you to try for yourself our patented InnerTalk technology. You can do so easily and without cost. We have a variety of free MP3 programs that can be yours, no strings attached. They're available on my website, eldontaylor.com, at no charge whatsoever. There are many titles to choose from, or you can download them all. This is the patented and scientifically proven effective InnerTalk technology and not samples. This is the real deal. We think of it as a part of our Pay It Forward program, so please go get yours today. All right, Shelley wrote, "Dear Eldon, wonderful books and DVDs. I have begun reading Mind Programming as well as Choices and Illusions. Thank you for the Serenity CD included in the Mind Programming book. It is absolutely wonderful. I heard your interview on Red Eyes. Keep up the wonderful work, as I know you will." Well, thank you very much, Shelley, and I'll do my best to do just that. For all of you listeners, you should know that online bookstores such as Amazon have my book, Mind Programming, in paperback on sale for around $10, all 100,000 words, and it comes with the InnerTalk CD Serenity. And we sell this CD every day of the week for $27.95. So you get the book, you get the CD, it's about $10. The only thing I can say is go get your copy if you haven't got one. Go get one for a friend for Christmas if you have. Sandy wrote, "I listen to your show on Hay House Radio, and I really enjoy it. You bring an intelligent and interesting flair and discussion with many interesting topics and questions we all have. Keep up the good work." Thank you, Sandy, and we do hope you will keep listening. All right, that's all the time we're going to take today for our letters, but I do invite you to opine by leaving comments on my website or by emailing Eldon, E-L-D-O-N, at eldontaylor.com, and or by joining me on Facebook. I do read all of your letters, even though we don't have time to share them all on the show. That said, they do impact our programming. So once again, thank you, and keep the letters coming. All right, before we get started with today's show, little announcement. My friend Rupert Sheldrake is conducting an experiment that you can participate in. Perhaps you remember when we had Dr. Sheldrake on our show. The experiment is called the Audio Anticipation Test, and here is the premise or idea about the experiment and what is asked of you. The question is simply, can you tell what you are about to hear? In other words, can you tell in advance what you're about to hear? This experiment involves only one person and takes less than 6 minutes to complete. You do 8 trials online and receive the score at the end. In each trial, you'll be presented with an audio clip selection at random. Before you hear it, you'll be asked to guess. So you'll be presented with a list of 4 possibilities. A Skylark singing, a speech of George W. Bush, the Beatles' Strawberry Fields, and a cat purring. You guess which audio clip you're about to hear. After you have made your selection and press the submit button, you will hear a sound sample for about 20 seconds. The next trial will then begin, and after each 8 trial test, you're given your score. Now, the question is, can you improve? We believe so. The more you trust your feelings, the better you're likely to do. The more you think about your guesses, the more likely your score will be at a chance level. It's fun, and the data is collected, and the results will be published. So try it out. Become a part of the research, and let's see if you have any precognitive powers or if you can train them. To do so, just go to Sheldrake, Sheldrake.org for more information. And, of course, that's www, all right? All right. Now to today's program, the fusion of mind and matter. Sometimes I read a book and I think, boy, would I like to ask this author a question or two. Well, one of the advantages to hosting a radio show is just this opportunity. Today's guest makes several controversial statements in her book, The Holographic Canvas. Some of what I read, I easily said to myself, sure, that's how the world works. That said, some of what I read pushed the credibility button so intensely that when I shared one idea with a young physicist, he broke out laughing. And I mean in an almost uncontrollable laugh. That said, I know that as soon as I rule out a possibility, I eliminate the potential that I could be wrong. We all have to pay attention and discriminate carefully while not becoming so blind that our minds are totally closed. As I told my friend, if you want to invent, you must see the world differently. To do that, you must allow that all of the so-called pat answers out there might just be wrong. And in this way, you open yourself up to discovery and new creations. Still, our minds are not to be treated like dumpsters where we throw just anything in it. So sometimes we have a bit of a balancing act involved in sorting out what might be worth attending to from the pure unmitigated rubbish that's out there under the rubric of some spiritual insight or the guise of some new enlightenment literature. Today's guest may just challenge all of our shades of that which is believable. She offers information based on the foundation of direct contact with the knowledge itself, not some ascended master from the other side. She is very direct about her explanations of how the mind and matter merge. Indeed, how the mind is generating reality according to information programmed into it. She uses the holographic paradigm of David Bohm and some of the physics of Gary Zukav while drawing on the Taoist mystical literature of dark room enlightenment, moving on to demonstrate the Merkabah's role in all of it while integrating the principles of sacred geometry into one holistic system. And that's not all, so you'll want to stay tuned for a lot more. But before we get fully into today's subject, I want to invite you to join us with your questions and comments. Okay, now I remember doing some research years ago about hypnosis when I came across a series of well-documented findings based on the Franklin Report, and that's Benjamin Franklin. Now, to make a long story short, it turns out that one of the measures that the Franklin group used to confirm, verify, that is, that a true state of hypnosis had been achieved was that the subject, in order to make sure that the subject was not faking, was the test of levitation. Now, We're not talking about an arm levitation like you might see used today in stage hypnosis where, you know, your arms kind of float and rise from the shoulders. But we're speaking about a full body levitation, the entire body floating upward. And the Franklin group would test to ensure that there were no hidden cables and the like, thereby ensuring that the levitation was genuine. In other words, in the not-too-distant past, hypnosis easily produced a full-body levitation. The subject floated off the surface they were on, free-floating in the air. Now, this is not mystical literature. This is science literature. Indeed, this is political science literature as well. So our guest today will tell us that this is still totally possible, but that we currently interact with a narrow understanding of possibilities. Newton's theory of gravity is now well known, and in her words, gravity broadcasts or transmits a spin that, quote, causes the human body to succumb to the surrounding field due to the low vibrations of our bodies, end quote. All right. Our guest today is Sonia Barrett. Sonia states that she has been a seeker of more expansive knowledge since childhood. Her curiosity and persistence has guided her to a greater understanding of the veils behind which collective conscious is shrouded. Sonia was born in Jamaica, and at the age of 13, along with her parents, she moved to the United States. She later attended Roosevelt University in Chicago and majored in voice, pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. Sonia's copy states that, quote, her curiosities of the journey led her to further studies of the science of the body and the process by which it is interwoven into the third-dimensional matrix, a matrix spiraling out of an infinite number of other matrices. Her work is an embrace of science and spirituality, treating them as one and the same. She is the host of Sovereign Mind Radio, the founder and publisher of Sovereign Mind Magazine, and the author of our subject today, the book, The Holographic Canvas, The Fusing of Mind and Matter. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Sonia Barrett.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's indeed our pleasure. You heard the setup piece. I did read your book, and I did really say, you know, I have got to ask this person some questions. But before we get started, let's begin, if you will, by telling us how you obtained the information in your book.
Well, the manner in which I obtained the information was just simply from my own questioning and my own, I would say, access to the inner aspect of myself. It was not, no, I didn't study, I didn't go to a metaphysical college. I didn't even know the term at the time, you know, quantum physics. None of these things were, I was aware of. So this was an understanding that just sort of unfolded for me out of just questioning and in a way that brought clarity to me, for me, because I wanted to understand more about the nature of existence, my existence here and the overall existence, without it coming necessarily directly from someone else. And so that was a desire of mine. So my focus now is, yes, I do say to people, whether an individual or whoever it is that comes to my workshops or lectures, is that it is possible for us to access basically, yes, any kind of information that we choose to, because we are made up of information. And that was my own understanding, is everything is data.
Okay, so if I just kind of want to get the picture here. In meditation or something, you're downloading this information from within yourself or from without yourself?
I'm going to say from within, because everything, well, external reality is truly, you know, an illusion, as we say. Everything is really spiraling out from inward, from that inner aspect. That we have a challenge with defining as to what exactly does that mean. So because everything is, as we say, science even says that, everything ultimately is everything else, I find that the information to everything is really encoded in everything. it's in the air we breathe. So for me, I didn't know how to meditate. So it's not as if I even understood that. That was something that on my own I also learned how to do. And it was in that meditative state that I found that I entered a space, I guess a level of consciousness that was definitely beyond my normal, or what had come to be my normal waking moment or my normal physical acceptance of reality. And so that's how it unfolded for me.
Okay, now for our listening audience, those that are not familiar with a holograph, everything is in everything. Let me see if I understand you. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just deriving or deducing, if you will. The principle of holograph is such that if we have, let's say, a holographic plate, we take a holographic photograph of anything, let's say a flower pot, and then I take this photo and I cut it into 1,000 little pieces. If I take any one of the pieces and shine light through it, I see the entire object. So what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, when you say science says everything is in everything, is you're drawing upon Bohm's paradigm of the holographic model of the universe. Is that right?
Well, yes, basically. I mean, it's simple. I think sometimes we've been taught to overcomplicate a lot of these things. I mean, we can take it to the simple aspect of taking a sliver from a plant and examining that, and it will have all of the information of the entire plant. So I see this as simple. I think there's a lot of contradiction that happens. On one level, we'll say, yes, everything is connected, but then we shift outside of that, and then everything becomes separate. Well, if everything is connected, then there has to be some core, some core structure, some core encoding. Yet everything has taken on a specific shape, a specific definition as to what it looks like, or exactly what it is. But it doesn't mean that it's not all.
I mean, isn't it quite different to have, say, the clonal capacity of a plant or a human or an animal, where, you know, a single cell is capable of replicating the whole, as to say that same clonal capacity within the human being is capable of replicating all of the universe?
Okay. Are you saying that my explanation would then sort of confuse, you know, how is it a plant which has a specific pattern as a plant? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, how does a plant with a specific pattern of a plant replicate all of the knowledge in the universe?
Well, ultimately, if everything is made up of the same substance, what I'm saying is, at a core level, there has to be, at a core level. We're not talking about the surface level of everything, because when we see a plant or we see a rock or we see our bodies, that's just on one level. That's just the surface level. But ultimately, the stuff that makes up everything is the same stuff. And what we've got is a formula that creates a pattern for, you know, each and everything that we identify then as the material world.
More a use of maybe the Aristotelian sense of form. But let's go on here. In your book, and I am familiar that there are some mystery schools that state perhaps there are as many as 36 strands, but in your book you state, and I quote, "Due to alterations in biology, specific areas of the brain have been disconnected." You continue, again, quote, "A smoke screen has been placed over the DNA, providing the illusion of having only two strands referred to as the double helix." Then you add, and again I quote, "Additional strands exist behind the illusion. Please explain how you know this and what evidence exists, if any, to support this statement and what it means to all of us if it's true."
Well, how do I know this? Again, it's just what I have seen within my own accessing then of information where I've seen this, and you know, so that from that perspective, this is what I've seen. That isn't so far-fetched when we examine the fact that the physical world exists based on the invisible. It's not that far-fetched. So what is happening in what I'm saying is, as we go through an evolution in our consciousness, which to me, when I say an evolution in our consciousness, it's sort of grabbing larger or more vast levels of self-awareness, that begins to create an evolution, also an expansion in the body to begin to see more of what is actually there. If everything is holographic, it doesn't mean that what we see with our eyes is always, obviously, ultimately it. And that is where I think we get so challenged. Because if we don't see something with our eyes, then our eyes are supposed to validate everything, which is absolutely, you know, the opposite. We are very limited because of that, because we lock into what we think we can see and touch. It's extremely limiting. So I see that there is more to the human body, to the human design, and science is even discovering that every day in terms of how much of the brain we use. This is, again, this is not all far-fetched. This is what science is also discovering. But my mention of the DNA kind of sounds... One second.
That's all right. We're coming
sounds
up on a
little
hard
crazy.
Break.
Yes, sounds a little crazy, but it's not.
We're coming up on a hard break, as I started to say, Sonia. So let's have you hold that thought. When we get back after break, I do want to give you the time to flesh that out a little more. But if I'm understanding you up to this point in time, you're basically saying that it is indeed necessary that we have more than two strands if we're going to be more than that which we are. And I'm not sure that I've got that right or that it makes sense to me. So we'll give you a chance when we get back. You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment. We're discussing the book, The Holographic Canvas, with author Sonia Barrett. We will return after a short break and a few words from our friends. Be sure to stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up. And thank you again for listening to Provocative Enlightenment.
Confusion, deception, manipulation, feeling a bit controlled, lost. Learn how you can take back control of your life through proven techniques in Eldon Taylor's revised edition of Choices and Illusions. This New York Times bestseller is a guidebook to your journey to self-actualization, filled with practical, real-life solutions backed by scientific studies and guaranteed to awaken your inner genie. Get your copy today from all bookstores.
Have you talked to yourself lately? What does that inner voice say? Are you constantly hearing negative feedback? Ready for a change? Inner Talk, Eldon Taylor's patented subliminal technology, can do just that. Change your inner self-talk. Turn off the negative by replacing it with positive affirmations. Inner Talk has been researched at universities such as Stanford and by governments around the world, and has been proven effective at priming your self-talk. Armed with a new positive outlook, you'll find everything becomes easier, from losing weight to stop smoking, giving presentations to riding horses, learn new things to being a powerful salesperson. Choose your title for change today. Visit www.innertalk.com. That's INNERTALK.com. Innertalk.com.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're discussing the book, The Holographic Canvas. But before we get back to today's show, I want to invite you to check out the free programs and sign up for our free newsletter when you visit eldentaylor.com. All right, let's go back to the show. Before the break, we had been talking about DNA. Sonia, is there anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation about DNA before we move on?
Well, I think that the whole, you know, DNA, everything is such a mystery to us. And it's unfortunate that we are so locked into set concepts and, you know, set principles when ultimately, you know, most of this, the information that we have, it's programmed information, of course, and it's become accepted, and we are most often afraid to step outside of the box. The DNA holds a great mystery to a great many people, and scientists are still finding that. So again, if we look at the holographic nature of reality, and we look at the fact that we say that we see with our brains and not with our eyes, and we could go into so many things that science is discovering, I don't see why it would be impossible to realize that there has to be more coding there. Whether we call it DNA or whatever it is we want to call it, there are other aspects of the human vehicle, from what I have seen, that are still not seen, not noticed, not accessed. No different than when evolution, as evolution has taken place, the body has had to change to adapt. The brain has had to change to adapt because the brain what? The brain actually orchestrates the essential organs, what's going to be necessary in the rest of the body. Where is that coming from? Well, it has to be the consciousness that embodies that physical form. So there is a lot more to us, and all I'm saying is if one really wants to go deeper in understanding more about who we are and the reality that we exist in, we have to be able to stretch our perception and expand. And you mentioned this, somebody laughed, the scientist laughed, and I find a lot of scientists to be so limiting because it's so much textbook research and experiments, and they're locked in, not all of them, because I've interviewed as well many other scientists who are actually really stretching those boundaries, but we are so, there's many of them are very locked in to a set of principles, and it might take them another 20 or 30 years, even 50 years from now, what will be discovered that they may laugh at this time. Time travel okay. is now something
and that of course has always been the instance. Science is a moving target. I don't disagree with that. However, I am going to disagree with. I think you're stretching consciousness when you move it into the area of how the body works or how a plant organism works. The body, the brain, that's a reticular activating system. It's anything but what we think of as part of our consciousness. But be that as it may, okay, we have decided that if it's not the DNA and additional helixes, additional strands of helix, that at least it is something else. Let's do this. Let's take a caller. We have a very patient caller on line one. Debbie has been hanging on for 40 minutes, so we'll take Debbie's phone call, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about frequency. Debbie, you're on the air. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment. What is your question?
I'm wondering why, if there is, like, a death, if somebody who has passed on is able to make contact with people that are still here, how do they determine when, and how is that possible? How is it done?
Sonia, do you want to take that one on? Do you want me to answer it?
I think she's saying, how is it possible that when someone loses their physical body, that there's still a communication occurring? Is
right.
that what you're saying? Because
right.
We go back to the fact that we are disillusioned, again, by, you know, and Eldon can answer it, you know, in his terms, but we're disillusioned by the physical body and the material world, and we have limited what we are to what we can see, and that's the reason why I mentioned consciousness before, because there's something else that occupies these vehicles. this vessel, and that is what I'm saying, and it's that something else that still exists beyond these physical bodies, and that's why that communication is still able to take place for some people.
And because a lot of people have never experienced that, they're skeptic.
Exactly. We're skeptical of those things that we have not experienced, and they become an impossibility. These bodies are just vehicles, and it's what is occupying these vehicles that's a significant part of our existence.
And nobody really knows what happens after death.
Unless you're dead.
Never touched that.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a transformation in the brain, in abilities after death that we have when we before death, but we don't know how to utilize them until after.
Right, and we can, you know, those are things, in my opinion anyway, from everything that I've been dealing with now in my own expansion, is to be able to access more of those possibilities. And it's not that you, obviously, you have to wait until you die to access these things. I think that everything is possible, and it's just that I think we have to open our perception, widen our perception to what's possible. We can't keep locking creation in a box, which is what we do. We lock it into something that's comfortable for us.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Debbie.
Okay.
Sonia.
Yes.
If you can obtain all the information because it is a holographic universe, and you can do that by just going inside, why is it you can't obtain the information of what happens when somebody passes over?
What do you mean? Why can't I kind of got lost in that.
We shouldn't have to wait, should we, till we die? If we can learn that there are many more strands of DNA than two by closing our eyes.
But that's what I was
we,
saying.
Can't we also learn what happens when you die?
Well, that's what I was just saying to her, that we don't have to wait until death. That's what I had just said. That's what I said. You don't have to wait until death to make these certain discoveries. It's just that we have to shift our perception. We have to be able to expand our perception and allow creation to show us more and more of what it is and what is possible. But that's not possible for us when we have so many boundaries on what we think is possible. That's the point I'm making.
Well, let me take you to where I thought you were going to go. You repeatedly in your book talk about frequency. Indeed, you talk about hertz, but we'll just call it cycles per second frequency. And for all intent and purposes, you point out that we know our identity as frequency. All matter knows its identity as frequency. And you further state that there are codes that open our perceptions, and sometimes these codes are hidden in symbols, and sometimes these symbols are used by society as subliminal codes to act as transmitters to keep us asleep or unawake or unaware, and sometimes the codes can assist in waking us up. Unpack that out for us, will you?
In terms of the symbols that I speak of, well, everything is, you know, everything.
In terms of the symbols, in terms of the frequency, I mean, what is the meaning? What is it you're saying to us there?
Well, if I understand the question correctly, when I speak of symbols, let's say everything, you know, is a symbol to us. Everything in our reality, it's all symbolic and has some sort of coding to it. It's like when we see the UPS truck, we don't even have to see the word UPS, but we know the color and so on and so forth. We automatically know it's UPS or FedEx or whatever the case may be. So everything, our brain, we are operating based on nothing but, you know, identifiable symbols. It's like we have a library of acceptabilities, things that are accepted. We know what a chair is. You know, that's a symbol. Everything basically ends up being like that. You're identifying based on a familiarity. But in terms of when I speak of frequency, I believe that what I was talking about there was the fact that everything is a frequency pattern, is some sort of frequency pattern. And in terms of the human body, when I spoke of when I mentioned consciousness and the expansion of consciousness, I was also speaking of the fact that the expansion of consciousness, which is expanding into deeper levels of awareness, would then mean that we are shifting in frequency or in vibration, you know, as we go to these various levels, you know, that are expanding outside of what we would call the Hertz field, then outside of that particular frequency, you know, that radio wave existence. I mean, and that's no different than the infrared field, where you know, it's said that psychics, you know, are tapping into that. So all of this is really, in my mind, a very simple process when you start looking at, you know, what we call the electromagnetic spectrum and how we operate, you know, in the Hertz field on a much slower slower cycles per second. And as it goes up, the spin becomes faster. And, you know, as a spin becomes faster, it becomes invisible. Same thing with dimensions. You know, we know scientists are even looking at that. Are there other realities or other dimensions outside of the one that we can see with our eyes? Well, yes, there has to be. There has to be many other fields occurring outside of this one. But however, according to the frequency of this field, this reality of where we exist, the operation of this field requires that level of frequency. So it's very hard for us to see anything that is spinning faster or outside of those ranges unless one starts to, you know, open up and expand more. So I see all of that as a possibility. Again, not because of the body, but because of the consciousness that occupies the vehicle. The body is only a vessel, and it's what occupies the vehicle.
I think most people agree that, you know, everything is a matter of frequency. And, of course, string theory and physics talks about multiple dimensions. There's many universe arguments, etc. But they're all built around mathematical models. And I suppose where I was going was looking for something a little more rigorous. So let's just leave that and let's go to something that I think is potentially among the most controversial notions in your book. And it's really what triggered the phone call inviting you on this show. You inform the reader in your book that Atlanteans founded this matrix, this game, the experiment that you and I inhabit and everybody that's listening into, we're just a part of this matrix. And further, you state that, and you call them gamekeepers, continuously dart in and out of time visiting the matrix. And I have to tell you that this seems very far-fetched to me, even though I'm aware of the A-life scenarios advanced by some of the great thinkers like Christopher Langton. So my question is, why present this? How does it matter? How is it relevant to this whole spiritual path that you're delivering?
Well, I you know, that is a big question because, one, it was never expressed. At least I've not really said that since I've been on the show. But for those people who have not ever listened to anything that I've said or written, is the fact that, you know, this is a giant cosmic game, which is how I refer to it. I see this as a giant cosmic game, and I see our experience here in these bodies on the planet as another aspect, another game experience as well, which we are discovering all the possibilities that can actually occur. When I mentioned Atlantis, and I didn't give a whole lot of detail speaking about it because I didn't think it was necessary to continue to elaborate on it. When I spoke about it in the book, I darted on it because of what I had seen. There's been so much curiosity around Atlantis, and certainly I'm not the first one to mention that. There's a lot of curiosity around it, And because we don't understand, one, time travel, we're still trying to understand the concept of time travel. We are just now stepping into a more expansive level of technology. I saw that there's a particular period of time, although no hardly any history is available for it, the particular area of time where scientists of that time managed to peak to a certain level of technology and was able to create simulations, you know, just as we say we create our own holograms, create various simulations, and from that particular those scientific abilities, that this reality is still an offshoot of that particular experience. Yeah, after all, what it looks like one matrix in another matrix in another matrix, one system in another system in another system. The Earth, what is in the universe? All these planets are there. Where is the universe? I mean, is it in another? Is it in something bigger? Does it go on and on and on? And that's all that I'm saying, is that what I had seen was that that particular time that is such a mystery to us still had some kind of effect on us because of the advancements in technology, which is what we are now doing, and we are doing some of these experiments. So this is not, again, not impossible at all. These are the things that many of the scientists here, not many, I shouldn't say that, but some of the scientists are working on things that we have not hit the light of day in terms of what we hear about.
Okay. Now, Sonia, there's quite a difference between picking up a person's book and I read the book and the person just says flatly, Atlanteans did this. There are this many strands of DNA. There is. And you just state those flatly. There's quite a difference between that and the kind of answer that I'm getting from you that is basically going around the block with, well, it's possible because of, well, you know. And I just have to say honestly that I do believe that that challenges your credibility. Not that I know anything or everything, because I certainly don't. But I do appreciate you coming on our show today. The book is The Holographic Canvas, The Fusing of Mind and Matter. The author is Sonia Barrett. There are links to my website to take you directly to the book. Sonia's website, I believe, is soniabarrett.com. Is that correct, Sonia?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And again, we appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you very much, and you have a great, wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you.
Ravinder, what do you think of that?
What do I think of it? I think it's challenging me a little, and there is the truth of the matter.
Yeah,
it's easy to say things. I mean, there are things that we're all aware of in principle. You know, we are all connected. We are, you know, there's all of those things that you know in theory, and they help you live a better life. But Sonia does sound as though she's got more answers to the questions, and I'm not hearing them.
I guess, you know, my problem with today is relative to if you're going to say the world is round, you should be prepared to bring forward some credible something or other about the world is round.
You need some evidence.
If you're going to say, the Great Pyramid, as Sonia does, and we didn't get to this, is there for this purpose, then you should be able to at least marshal up some information credible to say so. I mean, if I were to say to you that 2 and 2 equals 4, and then I were to demonstrate that 2 and 2 equal 4, you wouldn't have any difficulty with that.
No.
But if I were to say to you 2 and 2 equals 4, and then I was to give you an explanation how the square root of 5 somehow leads me to the conclusion that 2 plus 2 equals 4, I would be greatly confused, I'm
yes.
afraid. I don't mean to deride Sonia's work at all. I found that the book to be a fascinating read, but I also feel an obligation when, you know, when we bring a guest on the show, we're not necessarily endorsing that guest in any way, shape, or form. We are, you know, actually, I am exercising one of my little dreams, as you know, and that was just simply as a child, I always imagined what it would be like to have my round table, but not the round table of knights, the round table of the intellects, where, you know, I could sit down with the Platos and the Aristotles and the Pythagoras. I could sit down with the Einsteins and the Plancks and the Bohrs and Niels Bohr, and I could ask them questions about their material that I just didn't understand, or I could maybe, you know, attempt to enter into the way they thought, because giants of this kind just think differently.
They do.
You know?
And I want to learn how to think.
And so, you know, we use our radio show in large to do that. It's, I think, as everybody knows, I mean, this is avocation, absolutely an avocation. It's one of my favorite avocations. It takes a couple of days a week, but it's still nevertheless a hobby. Not something that we do for a living. All of that said, I have to be honest that if I invited you to my table and I didn't feel that you were giving me a straight answer, I'd have to let you know that I didn't think you were giving me a straight answer. Doesn't mean that you don't have one, just means I didn't get it. And I hope I don't offend anybody out there, but that's kind of how I see it. What's your take on that?
Oh, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, lots of us have some pretty amazing experiences in our meditations and stuff like that. And I bring a whole bunch of that to you. You know, we discuss this stuff a lot. But it's very different to say, I think and I feel, to this is fact. If you're going to tell me something is fact, then give me the evidence.
Well, that's kind of, you know, that I feel that I push the button a little bit myself in writing. What does that mean? Because I tell a story of a train accident, that there's no, you know, there is no scientific explanation for what happened.
But
you also remember I got on the plane. I flew to Salt Lake City. I had to pull the articles. You know, I visited with Connie. I all but did a deposition as though we were going into a court of law because... once again, I do think credibility is all important. All right, well, we've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment. I want to thank you all for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed our show, and will join us again next week, same time and same place. And if you like our show, do let us know. Okay, until next time, wherever you are in the world, remember, believing in yourself always matters.